Oh, well, let's see. Your delivery from the Smart Home Superstore will arrive this morning between 10:36 and 11:53. Oh, well, that's precise. Good. Finally, some clean clothes and. Oh, here's Mark.
Morning, John.
Hey, Mark.
You ready to work on the next episode?
I'd love to, but I just got a message from the store. They're delivering my new washer and dryer in a few minutes, and I need to be available to help it get brought in, you know, and set it up. Probably best not to have the doorbell ring and stop us in the middle of recording.
Makes sense. Call me when they're done.
Will do.
2 hours later.
Smart Home Superstore customer service. How may I help you?
I got a message saying your folks would be delivering my washer, and that was 2 hours ago, and they're still. No, just a second. Well, here they are. Never mind.
Got a delivery here for John Ladley.
Yeah, go ahead, back into the driveway. I'll show you where it goes.
1 hour later.
Okay, that'll do it. Just sign there.
All right, thanks. Hang on. It says you delivered at 11:22. It is way past 11:22 when you guys got here.
Yeah, we have to type in a delivery time, but it doesn't matter as long as it's before 5. We used to use 1111, but the system won't accept that anymore. So now we use 1122.
Oh, I would have thought that the delivery time would have been recorded automatically.
You'd think so. Talk to the IT guys. Anyway, have a great rest of your day.
Thanks. Okay, now.
Hey, John. Everything put together?
Finally. You know, I got a text message saying they'd arrive between, 10:36 and 11:53, and it wasn't until after 2 when they got here.
Huh. Numbers like that. Smells like AI to me.
And a bunch of bad quality data. The delivery guy doesn't have to put in the real delivery time. And it doesn't sound like anybody is checking.
Maybe we should talk about data quality this week.
Yeah, well, we touched on it last time relative to AI, but I have a few more things to say, especially after the morning I've had.
Great, then let's get to it.
This is John Ladley.
And Mark Cooper. Welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
Going to mention anything to the Smart Home Superstore about their data quality problem?
I really should, but hopefully they're listening to the podcast. Anyway, besides customer inconvenience and other annoyances, there are just so many straight-up financial benefits to having quality data.
Yep. And you know, speaking of financial, it seems to me that a big chunk of a company's finance department is just a big data quality operation. They know that their data is going to be scrutinized, and if it's not right, somebody could go to jail.
Or worse, their stock price could go down.
Exactly. All those people for just that one domain kind of gives you a sense for the magnitude of the problem that's going unaddressed.
So, we will address it. Where do I begin on data quality? Since we want to talk to business and data leaders, let's start at the top. First, fixing data quality is a guaranteed 2% on your top line. Are you intrigued? Let me break that down. First, data quality is like product or material quality. It means that the data, like product or raw material, needs to meet the expectations of its consumer. It needs to do the job. That's easy enough, but it also means that there's lots of different perspectives about data quality. Is it just the wrong value? But maybe it's late. Maybe it's just not accurate enough, or maybe it's old. Data quality is really data that's suitable for whoever wants to use it. In 2016, a study came out that data quality costs the United States economy $3.1 trillion. Now that's a chunk of GDP. That is significant, but we work around it. I mean, so far no one has said, oh my gosh, $3.1 trillion in 2016, we fixed it. No. Every so often you hear a tisk tisk on the news that We need to do something about that because a satellite crashed because of some data quality issue or something, but we haven't done anything really big about it. But now, let's take that shady data and stuff it into artificial intelligence. See, now we're going to lose some sleep. Data quality needs to be a leader-level topic now. There's a lot of flavors. They need to be understood. Yes, it's going to cost you a little bit of money, but let's get back to that 2%. If you're J.P. Morgan, you had $49.5 billion in net income in 2023. 2% of that is just a touch under $1 billion. Now, that might not be all in one place, but that's not bad. In my practice, I look for that 2% all the time, and I always find it. Huge and fast returns and eliminates a lot of other problems. One person's data quality is another person's problem, another person's risk. You have to fix it. So at the end of the day, it's not a techie issue. It isn't whining from people who can't run their departments. It's endemic, and we have to fix it, and we need to think about it. And along the way, be nice. I am delighted to have Dr. Tom Redman with us today. Tom is a trusted colleague, friend, and fellow researcher in many things data with me. He is a well-published author, and you can see his thoughtful words in Harvard Business Review and other business publications. Tom, welcome to the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John. I'm delighted to be here.
Tom, we started this show with an example of data quality in the wild. We talked about a customer service faux pas and how people have to deal with that all the time. You and I have talked about this a while. We started noodling with a 2% idea several years ago. And I mentioned that as well, that there's a lot of money just laying on the floor for data quality. So to start, where do you see, or what do you see now in organizations? Are organizations starting to consider data quality as a core issue?
So that's a really interesting question, John. So first of all, I mean, companies are all over the map, right? I would suppose that in the main, as I see it, more and more companies are acknowledging they have a data quality problem. For most, the acknowledging we have a problem has not yet translated into proactive, positive action that is going to actually solve the problem. So many companies have bought a tool and they've implemented the tool, but they're not really working very well, and so they haven't sort of made the fundamental shifts that they need to make to actually make long-term improvements.
So if I'm a CEO and you've been hired to help me, and let's pretend I'm a rare CEO, but I get it. I get data stuff. All right. Maybe I recently worked with a bank here where the CEO actually started as a SQL coder and he really got data, and it was like so much fun to work with this dude. I mean, we even talked about some SQL commands and stuff like that once, but anyway, so this CEO gets it. What's the first thing a CEO who gets it has to do?
There's an old saying that says organizations are perfectly designed to achieve the results they achieve. And by and large, what organizations have done is they've misdiagnosed data quality as a technology problem. And in many cases, they've assigned then, data quality to their tech departments. It turns out, data and information technologies are two very different kinds of assets. And there's really very little information IT departments can do about this, right? So the first thing you have to understand is you got to address the problem properly, and you got to get the right people in place. And so the thing we've learned over and over again is that data quality, most data quality problems originate in business processes. And it may be, marketing is creating leads for sales, but, their job is not to create good leads. It's just to create leads. And so willy-nilly, they're sending bad leads over the barrier that separates marketing and sales. And so pick out any two departments and basically you find this. And And but the point is this behavior is baked in organizationally. It is baked in because the problem has been assigned to the wrong department, and it's baked in because there's a silo called marketing, and there's a silo called sales, and there's a silo called operations and finance and so forth. And so, look, the thing that we found that works best is that people understand themselves, understand that they're in two roles. They're already in these roles, but most don't recognize them, but they are data creators, right? They are creating data that other people in the organization need to do their jobs. And they are data customers in the sense that they're using data created by someone upstream of them, okay? Now, it is observably true that people have these roles, but if you mention it to them, they go, never thought about that, mm-hmm. right? And, mm-hmm. and so those with the best data are getting as many people, as I call them regular people, right? They don't have data in their title, to understand how important these roles are. And if you're a customer, don't just tolerate bad stuff coming in, right? Figure out what you really need. Go figure out where it's coming from. Sit down with the creators and make some improvements. And similarly, if you're a customer and you're creating stuff, you don't know why you're creating it, well, figure it out. Maybe nobody's using it and you can skinny up your job. And so this, you're the CEO, right? You're going to have to sort of get this concept into the company. Right? So that's the fundamental thing. You may have to build a small data quality staff. I like to call them small but mighty, and build a network of variously called ambassadors or embedded data managers or responsible parties to make this all work. But your job is to bring focus to the area and build the organizational capabilities that you need to attack it at scale across the entire company.
Okay, so I'm gonna extend this just for a little while. I've got my team. I'm the enlightened CEO. You're in the room. I'm telling my team that data quality is embedded in processes. We have become habituated with behaviors that we now think are normal day in, day out things, but are really probably not helping. And we need to pry this out of the organization. Is that a sufficient recap of what you said?
So when you say habituated, by that you mean it's just become the way we typically do work?
Yeah, I mean, it's like later on in the show, one of our other episodes, we're going to talk about specific roles and titles, and there's the role of the business analyst, right? Which you can get a degree now and be a business analyst, but the business analyst was created as a Band-Aid to problems.
Right.
Now it's a profession.
Right.
I mean, it's not like, we needed doctors because people had to get better, but did we really need BAs? We need to persist on them anyway. So, yeah, I mean, we accept stuff now as business as usual that maybe shouldn't be business as usual.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, so first of all, I mean, the most important roles are data creator and data customer. And that's because everyone has them. And they're a significant fraction of practically everybody's day. Right. Now it's not like, it's not like people come in and they go, John, today I'm going to create a data error because I know four departments and 6 months later it's going to foul somebody else wearing the same badge up. But I mean, just observe organizations, and it's happening in all organizations, in all departments, all the time, right? Yeah. And you can't, you can't blame anybody. It's like somebody doesn't know somebody else is using it, right? But that habit, right, that sort of way of working, it's inconsistent with high quality data.
Yeah,
and so it's the key. When you said habituate, it's the key. Companies are in bad habits. Right. I mean, again, they stepped into them gradually, but they have to be broken. And the good news is these roles aren't that difficult. The bad news is any kind of change is difficult.
Right. Yeah.
But those who step up and make this change, I mean, they enjoy the benefits of a better data. Another benefit they get is, you know, if your job is to come in and spend 3 hours a day cleaning up other people's crap so that, you know, you can go do your job. Right. Well, this offers the opportunity. Being a data customer is way more fun. Being an enlightened data creator, knowing why you're doing stuff, it's way more fun than what people are doing today. And so, you know, look, I sometimes think about data quality. It's a good way of saying it is, how do we unleash human potential, right? How do we get people into the data game? And this is the easy entry point.
That gets me kind of to the next question. I mean, it flows right into it. You've just mentioned some scenarios of how this plays out. So give me some examples of what's been successful or successful for your practice. Tell us about what's working out there. Give us some examples.
Well, so I mean, again, the basic pattern is you got to get people in these customer and creator roles, right? You need to get some measurements in place. So it's not just about anecdotes, right? You need to sort out how you're going to do improvement, you know, whether you're going to use, you know, the Six Sigma or Lean or quality. You need to sort that out. I find it works best problem by problem. And so the first problem I actually advised on was a long time ago. I was at AT&T and it was a billing problem. And there was a lot of waste in checking access bills at AT&T. It doesn't matter what access bills were, but there's a lot of money being expended and it was not clear that it was working very well. And so rather than, you know, checking bills, why don't we just get them created properly in the first place? And then, you know, I worked on a problem where was it with a bank, and the problem had to do with regulatory reporting, know your customer requirements, and the data associated with meeting those requirements was just bad. So why is that? What are we going to do about it? And I've worked in problems in consumer products around what's our market share and how do we know? And so I spent considerable time in oil and gas. It's just some basic questions like, you know, where's the well and what stuff's in it and that kind of thing. And so I think this business of like, how are you going to get started? Well, the data quality is good, therefore we need to all take it on. That's a harder sell than we're going to work problem by problem by problem.
Yeah.
It also underscores something that, you know, it's like any person with a business problem, I don't need an enlightened CEO. I need, you know, somebody with a business problem can take up data quality. One other thing, and this is an exception, but I've done some work recently, and this has appeared in the public domain, so I can talk about it. But with Gulf Bank in Kuwait, and the first thing that we did there was we built a network of people called ambassadors, which I wanted one person and in every team, maybe a tenth or a quarter time role to sort of take up the mantle for data quality. And there, their first assignment was make a measurement, right? And the core team was assembling this overall picture of data quality inside the company. And so this was done in a very much top-down way. Well, once you made the measurements, the problems clarified themselves, right? And then the business of, okay, who's the customer here? Who's the creator? How are we going to get to the root cause of the problem, became really worked. I mean, it came into practice, and I think this is very instructive for those companies that are in your viewership that are thinking about AI, right? I mean, so you know, like AI, you know, we're talking about AI everywhere, and so no telling where you're going to want to do it, right? But if you want to do it, it is absolutely clear that you can't do good AI without high quality data. And if you're thinking about doing it, you know, in a big way across your company, you've got to get on data quality across the company. And I think, and the Gulf Bank example is really a good one.
Yeah, it is. Thanks. Tom, we end our interviews asking all guests the same two questions. So here's the first one. Who is a non-technology leader that you admire? You don't have to name a name, or you can name a name, but why and how do we apply that to our data space?
Okay. Am I considered a technology person?
No, I know you well enough. No, you're everyone listening here who says this is a Propellerhead podcast, it is not, because Tom is nowhere near Propellerhead status. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll just clear the air on that. Your identity is safe.
So thank you. Thank you for that. So John, I think I want to pick out a couple things, if I may. The first is the best part of my career has been working with people who had business problems and decided they were going to solve that problem. They may not have thought data quality was the way to do it, but they found out it was. And in solving their problems, they both solved their problem and they wrote a script for the rest of the organization. And I've given these people the name provocateurs. Organizations, if you're interested in change, you need some people at the front who will you know, become provocateurs. And so there's a category of them. I'll just call out Bob Palke, who is the first one that I worked with. And so Bob just, you know, he did his company an enormous favor by solving an enormous problem and then pointing out, look, here it is for you to take advantage of. And can I call out one other person? Can I call out an editor?
Sure.
So look, I mean, I'm no longer a technical person, but I was at one time. And as I began working on data quality, at some point I decided it's time to write a management article. And so I wrote up a management article and I sent it off to Sloan Management Review. And two or three weeks later, I got a call from a very nice career-changing woman for me named Sarah Cliff. And Sarah said, Tom, there's some interesting ideas in this paper. You know, it's a shame you don't know how to write. But then what she did was she sized some instructions for me. She said, Tom, I want you to just rewrite this paper. I don't want you to change the content. But every time you can shorten a sentence, I want you to shorten a sentence. Mm-hmm. The second thing I want you to do is every time there's a passive voice verb in it, I want you to try to replace it with a powerful active voice verb.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, so I think I went home and I cried, you know, kind of. I'm sure
I did the same thing when I got that letter too from someone. Yeah.
But then I really took it to heart, right? And so for me, it was changing in the sense that, like, if I really want to be in this space and I really want to provide leadership in this space, I have to be able to communicate in lots and lots of different ways. I need to be able to express myself clearly. Part of the message was I need to simplify things, and I need to be able to simplify them sometimes for technologists and sometimes for business people. And sometimes, like for the CEO that, you know, that we were talking about earlier here. And Sarah Cliff started me on that path. And I've ran across her, you know, many times since that. And so personally, you know, I feel I owe a debt, which I'll never repay, but I am trying to pass on.
That's great. That's great. Next question, last one, for this part of your participation in the program. If you were all powerful, or I'll tell guests if they're uncomfortable with being all powerful, I'll say, pretend you're Harry Potter. You have one spell you can use in an organization and instantly get something done around data. What would that one thing be that you would want? What's that spell you would use on an organization?
So that's a great question, John. And the answer will be around people. I think that most people I talk to, right, in companies and even people in the data space, they think that people are the problem, right? People are the problem. They're not doing this, they're not doing that. And I don't know, maybe, people are sort of an incremental part, but I would change that all solutions run through people. And people are awesome. And seeing that and unleashing people, the spell is going from people are part of the problem to people are the solution. That'd be the spell I'd like to cast.
Okay, dope. Great. Tom, thanks so much. We would like you to come back in the future and talk more about this, more about some practical data quality stuff. But for now, thanks for your time.
Yep. Thanks for reaching out, John. A pleasure as always.
And thanks to our sponsor, the gurus at Hubris Data Pros. With Hubris, you'll always think you've got quality data.
Welcome to Dispatches from Rock Bottom, dredging up practical information, advice, and food for thought. Let's continue our conversation about data quality. Enough companies have enough experience with AI to begin to recognize that the accuracy and the performance of these systems really depends upon the quality of the data used to train them. It's the old garbage in, garbage out. So let's talk about something fundamental to data quality: expected data content. It's a key part of understanding your data and the necessary prerequisite for data quality. After all, you can't know if the data's right if you don't know what the data's supposed to be. I think we've mentioned it in every episode of the Rock Bottom Data Feed so far, that data is about people, and this is no exception. It's about discipline and culture. Tools and technology can certainly help, but without the discipline to apply them properly, they're useless. Data understanding needs to be incorporated into your standard operating procedures and your standard development processes. Work with whoever's creating your requirements or epics or user stories or whatever to provide definitions and expected content for each data element. If your title begins with a C or a V, ask yourself first if you care about the accuracy, success, and sustainability of your AI and ML model development. If you do, then between now and next time, the one thing you can do is to prioritize data understanding. Don't let it be consigned to some never-happening later date after the important project stuff gets finished. For everybody else, the one thing you can do between now and next time is to start profiling some data. You don't have to spend a lot of time or any money. Use the resources you already have. Write a program or script or SQL query that does account and group by. Publish the results on your departmental website or report them during your next project status meeting. This is the first step towards sustainable AI. That's what I think. We'd love to hear your stories if you're willing to share. Write us at rockbottom@counterthreadedproductions.com.
We're back with Tom Redmond for a segment we call the Audio Data Rorschach Test. Tom, I'm going to play a brief snippet of music, and you're going to respond with a data-related anecdote conjured up by that music. So when I play the music, I want you to hear it, your immediate reaction, but please, in the context of data. Are you ready, Tom?
I'm ready. I feel like a game show, John.
It is. To fairly select the music, though, I want you to pick a color. I'm going to name some colors, and you just stop me when you hear a color that you like. Turquoise, mauve, candy apple red, yellow, green, blue.
Blue.
Blue. Very good, Tom. As you've told me before, it is the color of?
Leadership.
Very good. So that would make it royal blue. Okay. Here comes the music now. What are you thinking?
So it conjures up lots of little anecdotes with people sort of conflicted, right? They're conflicted in that there's this new thing that we can try. It may not work. What we're doing now is not working. This thing we may try, it may not work. And will I look silly? And it's the evaluation, and it's by the way, lots and lots of people's mind.
Yeah,
of, you know, is this worth the personal risk to try something new?
Oh, that's like one of the best ever. Thank you, Tom. Thank you so very much for being our guest on the Rock Bottom Data Feed.
And thanks again to our sponsor, Hubris Data Pros, reminding you that any resemblance to actual events, persons, or businesses, living or dead, is purely coincidental. Sounds like there's a lot we can all do to improve the quality of our data, most of it cultural and a little bit technical. And let's hope that someone from the Smart Home Superstore was listening, although I'm sure we'll come back to this topic often in future episodes. So until next time, this has been John Ladley and Mark Cooper for the Rock Bottom Data Feed. Thanks for listening, and remember, when you're here, you've reached rock bottom. You can find more information about the topics covered in this episode, the fuss about data quality, at our website, counterthreadedproductions.com. The Rock Bottom Data Feed is a Counter-Threaded production, copyright 2024, all rights reserved.